From KCPW News in Salt Lake City, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. From KCPW in Salt Lake City, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. He nicknamed the pain Bernie, a sad indicator that a relationship had developed between 13-year-old Kevin and the mysterious searing pain in his gut. Doctors couldn't find an acute cause for the pain, even as Kevin's appetite plummeted and his passion for soccer was put on hold due to rapid weight loss. But those two symptoms led to a misdiagnosis of anorexia, a false lead that took over a year to undo. Kevin and his mother, Vicki Whiting, a professor at Westminster College, have documented their journey through the healthcare system in a new book. And today on the program, they join us to share what they've learned about the medical maze and patient advocacy. Plus, the particular challenges facing Latina women, a preview of an upcoming community dialogue. All that and your calls after the news. From KCPW in Salt Lake City, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. He nicknamed the pain Bernie, a sad indicator that a relationship had developed between 13-year-old Kevin and the mysterious searing pain in his gut. Doctors couldn't find an acute cause for the pain, even as Kevin's appetite plummeted and his passion for soccer was put on hold due to rapid weight loss. But those two symptoms led to a misdiagnosis of anorexia, a false lead that took over a year to undo. Kevin and his mother, Vicki Whiting, a professor at Westminster College, have documented their journey through the healthcare system in a new book. And today on the program, they join us to share what they've learned about the medical maze and patient advocacy. Also on the program, plus the particular challenges facing Latina women, a preview of an upcoming community dialogue. All that and your calls after the news. Good morning, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. It's a parent's worst nightmare, finding your child in pain and not knowing why. Vicki Whiting was caught up in that traumatic scenario for over a year before uncovering what was really hurting her son, Kevin. Kevin and Vicki Whiting have written a new memoir of their family's journey through the healthcare system, and today on the program, they join me in studio to share what they've learned. Vicki and Kevin Whiting, thanks so much for being here. Vicki Whiting is a professor of management in the Gore School of Business at Westminster College. She's also a consultant on leadership and executive development for numerous companies. She's also the mother of three. Her son, Kevin, is a senior at Park City High School. He just returned from a trip, a Chinese exchange program trip. And he plans on graduating next spring. Again, they are the co-authors of the book In Pain We Trust, a conversation between mother and son on the journey from sickness to health. Later on in the program, we'll be talking about what's on the minds of Latina women today, a preview of the community dialogue scheduled for tonight. But first, we're wading through the healthcare system. Have you or a loved one faced a medical crisis? And what lessons did you learn from working with doctors, with insurance, with schools? 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. After reading your book, I'm struck about how traumatic the past few years have been for you both, for your family. You know, the frustrating interactions with doctors, the nausea and pain that you experienced, Kevin. And I'm just curious why you wanted to tell this story. In some ways, I imagine it's like reliving some of that traumatic experience. Vicki Whiting, why did you decide it was important for you to write this book?
But it came at Kevin's request, really, at the end, once we knew he was going to live, once he was starting to get better. He was just stuck in why this happened to him, and could anything beneficial come out of this horrific trip that he'd been on? And as we talked, we realized that we had learned so much, and so many people were going through similar kinds of healthcare situations, that perhaps by sharing our story we could provide insights into what worked for us to bring Kevin back to health and to maybe give hope to others.
Kevin, how's your health now?
It's good. It's doing a lot better. Definitely.
You are now 17.
Yes.
You're still very thin.
Extremely, yeah.
You're looking for ways to gain weight. Why did you feel it was important to tell your saga over the last 4 or 5 years?
For me, it was mostly like I really wanted to do anything I could to prevent others from having similar things happen to them, or that kind of thing.
Avoiding lessons from the past, I suppose. I want to begin with what you now see as a turning point in Kevin's case, Vicki Whiting. Kevin had been experiencing severe abdominal pain for weeks. You'd taken him to your primary care physician. Not a whole lot of insight there. They advised you to take him to the ER. And once you got to the emergency room, a doctor made a note on his chart. Tell us about that turning point for you.
Yes, as Kevin was ushered from the emergency room into a longer hospital stay, a shorthand note that a doctor made noted that he was anorexic, which was noting his appearance. However, that shorthand note was turned into kind of a de facto diagnosis in his medical charts, unbeknownst to us. Therefore, every follow-on specialist, every time we went back to the hospital, the assumption was that he was suffering from anorexic nervosa, which is a real terrible disease, and yet it wasn't Kevin's disease. He was in pain, and he was thin and losing additional weight, and so it sent us rather down a path of diagnosing what was causing his pain into a path of understanding perhaps what was the psychological or mental issues that were attending his condition. And that took us months and horrible side paths and left him not only in a worse, more tenuous health condition, but also the medicines that they use to treat anorexia nervosa are antidepressants and anti-anxiety medicines, which when you don't need them can cause you to be depressed and anxious, which eventually brought Kevin to a suicidal state. It was a heartbreaking, terrible portion of our story.
Your writing of this makes me sympathize with why you went along with this initial diagnosis. You were sleep deprived. You're incredibly worried. You've got two other kids at home. You've got your work responsibilities to worry about. Talk about that part of the burden of having a sick child, just dealing with all of the external factors that are going on around you and kind of leaning on a doctor's word.
Yeah, and the doctors are well-intentioned. They're really trying to help the patient get well, and yet, as a parent, and a patient, you need their expertise, and you need them to listen and to understand and believe that they are examining all possible scenarios, because I simply did not have time. I mean, I didn't have time to eat. I didn't have time to attend to many issues, the simple things that we do every day. And the doctors, I think, are caught in a system where they don't have time, perhaps, or don't make time to understand what all of the different diagnosis should be done, the different paths that might be. And so finally, when I realized that this was going nowhere, that we were caught in this trap, I realized that it was up to me. I had to be the advocate. I had to look at different paths because we were going nowhere and he was getting sicker.
We're speaking with Vicki Whiting. She's a professor of management in the Gore School of Business at Westminster College. Also, her son Kevin Whiting is with us. He's a senior at Park City High School, and we're talking about the experience that they relate in a new book, In Pain We Trust, a conversation between mother and son on the journey from sickness to health. If you'd like to join us about with your stories about navigating the healthcare maze, 801-355-TALK, 801-355-8255. Kevin, the book is written kind of in... you've got almost like a journal entry from you, and then you've mm-hmm. got one from your mom. So you're remembering things that happened to you both at the same time, but from different perspectives. And you seemed to know pretty quickly that doctors were sniffing up the wrong tree on this one. What were some of the questions that they were asking? And you were just like, why do they keep asking me about this?
Things like... It was things like, do you often feel bad about your life? The kind of things they use to diagnose depression that just, I knew I wasn't depressed. I just, and I knew that the pain was real, but they didn't listen and they just kept trying to force the depression on me.
One thing that you wrote about, you said, you know, they kept asking you about bullying or, you know, being harassed at school or something. And at one point you were like, should I just answer them the way that they want me to answer so that they'll make the pain go away? I thought that was pretty telling.
Yeah, they would not stop with all that bullying, depression, anxiety. It just was never ending, no matter who we went to.
Hmm. They put Kevin on some pretty strong antidepressants, anti-anxiety medications, along with some pretty strong pain pills. And Vicki, you kept a very detailed log of all of the things that he was eating and the medicines that he was being given. And that you write that you began to question the anorexia diagnosis at some point. When you brought these concerns to the doctors, you became part of the problem.
Yes. They claimed that perhaps my over-involvement in Kevin's case was an indicator that he had not, I think the word they used was individuated from me. It was a word I wasn't familiar with, but it became a word that resonated in my mind because his connection to me and my listening to him, I knew was his lifeline, and yet they turned it as an evidence that Kevin hadn't matured to a point where he could stand on his own. When he was 12, 13, he was more independent than my other two children had been at that same age point. So I had those two points of comparison and knew that the sicker he got, the more attached we became. As I became his voice, his pain shut him in. He was so focused on just trying to stay alive that we worked together as a team. And to have that turned as a part of the problem was it was painful. It was hurtful.
So how do you work through that? How do you deal with that when the blame starts to shift to you instead of what's going on physically with your son? How do you remain an effective advocate?
Yeah, I think that there were two things that I did, and along with my husband Jeff, who was also a huge piece of our getting Kevin well. Number one, there's great sites, the National Institute of Health Online. I kept going back. The scores that you said that we tracked, we called it Kevin's APE score, his appetite, his pain, and his energy level. And then I looked at how the medicines that they prescribed interacted with those baseline measurements that I took. And when people call and ask what they can do to own their own health care, that's one of the first things I recommend is daily, weekly, keep these charts, track the trends, and then look at the National Institute of Health, where these research centers of excellence are. And we just finally moved him out of the hospital where nothing was happening, where he was getting sicker. And we went to where the experts were, where we could get a fresh set of eyes to look at the information that we had kept, what had worked, what hadn't worked. We talked to pharmacists. Pharmacists are phenomenal resources in understanding what's going on. So we just looked for different paths through the system.
Hmm. You also tried alternative medicines. You tried acupuncture. I'm wondering how your experience, how has it changed the way that you view doctors today? I'm sure that doctors are an ongoing part of your lives continually. Vicki Whiting, how are you thinking about doctor's advice now?
I have the greatest respect for doctors. I think that most every doctor that we interacted with really had Kevin's best care in mind. I felt that it wasn't the doctors that didn't care, it was the system they were trapped in. When we went to a pediatric GI and he had 6 minutes to spend with a patient, there's no way to understand such a complex chronic situation in 6 minutes. They don't have the time to review his chart, which at that point was 2 inches thick. And so I have great respect for the medical field and their dedication to the patients. And I feel badly that they're caught in this system that doesn't allow them to be the doctors that I think that the majority of them trained to be.
Hmm. Kevin, how are you thinking about doctors these days?
about the same, pretty much. I don't know.
Do you trust them?
I trust certain ones. My family practice, definitely. I trust them with anything. But some of the past doctors that I saw, maybe not so much.
Hmm. Kevin Whiting, he's a senior at Park City High School who faced some mysterious pains for years before doctors were able to discover what was going on. Vicki Whiting, his mother, is a professor of management in the Gore School of Business at Westminster College. Together, they have written a new book, In Pain We Trust, a conversation between mother and son on the journey from sickness to health. If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. We need to take a break, but we'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW, Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce. Today on the program, Dr. Vicki Whiting and her son Kevin Whiting. Kevin's unexplained abdominal pain sent them on an unexpected and often frustrating journey through the healthcare system. Have you had to become a health advocate for someone you love? How did you find medical answers? If you've got questions or comments for the Whitings, give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. They've chronicled their journey in a new book, In Pain We Trust. So, Vicki Whiting, before any of this happened, you had planned a family trip to New Zealand. And it occurred at a time that wasn't very convenient for your family. And yet you decided to go ahead with the trip as a way to not only get away from it all, but to schedule a consultation with a New Zealand doctor, a specialist. How different was your interaction with the New Zealand healthcare system than with the healthcare system that you saw here in Utah?
It was night and day different. When we went into, there are a lot of neurogastroenterologist specialists, a lot of research going on in that part of the world. And from our first appointment through the 3 weeks that we visited with different doctors there, the time that was spent to understand the situation, the willingness to say, gosh, we aren't sure, but we are going to gather six doctors together on Friday and have all of us look at your case and see if we think the medicines that we have available here that aren't available in the United States might be helpful, to see if you're going down the right path. The commitment to listening, I think, was really, for me, the significant distinguishing difference, not only the one doctor that we met with, but their willingness then to bring in a board of doctors immediately based on the single case.
And Kevin, you write about that in the in your journal entry mm-hmm. about just the contrast with, you know, a doctor who was taking the time to listen to the symptoms that you had mm-hmm. instead of going back to that initial misdiagnosis.
Yeah, it was amazing. The fact that they spent an hour and a half the first time just listening. They didn't have the charts to say, oh, it's anorexia, let's just kick him out and give him antidepressants and throw him out. So they listened, they tried to do whatever they could to figure out past anything mental that they thought it could be, to figure out what was physically going on.
Mm. As important as the medical advice that you got in New Zealand, it seemed to restore your sense of hope. Like you could continue on because you had hit a pretty low point before the trip.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Just getting away from my life back here, like going to doctors twice a week and going in for tests and all that, to be able to go somewhere completely new and just have fun and relax and go to the beach. It was an amazing break from my life.
And Vicky, it did present some challenges, though, traveling with a sick child.
Yes, on many, many different levels. Kevin was so restricted in what food would stay down in his system. Certainly dealing with that level of pain away from in a liquid diet, traveling halfway around the world, and still attending to the needs of the other children traveling internationally, worth it. Absolutely worth it.
Hmm. You mentioned your two other children and how they also were kind of thrown into this chaos. How did Phil and Katie, how did they navigate their school life, their social life, life without you? Because you really were taken out of the home for extended periods of time.
Yeah, the amount of responsibility that was put on Philip's shoulder as Jeff and I were at the hospital and spending so much time trying to find the doctors and what was wrong. I think Katie was in middle school, and the team of counselors and teachers in understanding what was going on and giving her a safe place to go where she felt supported and loved was so important, and the adjustments that were made. And the counselors were also very willing to tell Jeff and I, here's what you need to do to support Katie. You need to help her explain what she's going through. You need to give her attention. They were very direct with us in mm-hmm. terms of how we could attend to her as well as trying to keep Kevin alive. Philip was in high school, and that was a very difficult situation. Certain teachers were phenomenal and understood. While others were very disconnected, very sharp, some even offered that their unwillingness to work with him on deadlines or on acceptance of maybe his being exhausted in the morning because he'd been at the hospital all night would strengthen him the harder they were, because they were helping to have him understand what real life was about, which I found was rather ironic. But in general, the demands on parents as they're dealing with a chronic illness in the family or this kind of stressor, and then still having to advocate for the other kids in the school system, it's I think a lesson for everyone in every discipline to realize as a teacher that maybe there are things going on at the home that are affecting the students, and the parents may not be able to be there to advocate, to have the parent meetings, to make it to the parent-teacher meetings. Just looking outside themselves, that's, I think, the most important lesson that I wanted people to hear.
Mm-hmm. And yet you still write that you were lucky. You're one of the lucky ones with health insurance, and you had stable employment. You didn't have to worry about selling your house to pay the medical bills. And yet you still had a full workload. You had work obligations that had to be met in order to keep that precious health insurance. How hard was it to keep your focus in the game at the office and keep it all together while you've got all of this turmoil going on in Kevin's life?
It's amazing the depths of what we draw on in extreme situations. There were a couple times when I would go in to teach a class, and I'd rush from the hospital, rush into class. And I broke down in class a couple of times. I tried to keep them separate, but we're an integrated human being, and you can't keep them absolutely separate. But I didn't have a choice, because to give up that health insurance would cost us everything. My husband was building a new company, and so he didn't have an option for health insurance. And so it was just really just looking at what was ahead of me in the next half hour, and knowing that there were certain things I couldn't give up, and my job was one of them.
Hmm. Vicki Whiting, a professor of management in the Gore School of Business at Westminster College. She's here with her son, Kevin, a senior at Park City High School, talking about their book, In Pain We Trust. If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number. So doctor after doctor, finally you met a doctor named a colorectal specialist, I believe, Dr. Eyring. Kevin, what made him so different?
I think it was possibly due to the fact that he was actually one of my dad's colleagues, so he had seen what was going on with the family and knew it wasn't what all the other doctors were saying, so he could do what the Australian and New Zealand doctors had done and look past that mm-hmm. and try and run some tests to get the physical answers.
Mm-hmm. Vicki, how was that interaction? I mean, it must have been quite refreshing to finally meet somebody who was thinking outside of that box that you've been put in.
Yeah, I think he was the first person that also went back in history and started saying, okay, what was going on before even the pain started, and looked at some maybe early indications from Kevin's baby books. It had us look at early pictures to see that he had really failed to thrive physically his entire life. And so that part, widening the scope of what was considered was significant. And then I remember specifically, he said, look, there's 8 different diagnostic tests that we will do before we even start thinking that this is a mental situation. And knowing that there were a list of 8 tests, and he said we might have to go to California for the last couple, but we're not going to take something that we can only assume it might be in terms of mental, emotional, until we rule out every single physical possibility. And there was just having that plan, having that understanding. The other thing that he suggested, which was important, was separating the path of diagnosis along with the quality of life. So he suggested we continue to work with our family doctors to keep Kevin's quality of life as good as possible, which is a separate specialty than working with surgeons to do the diagnostics. And that was a huge lesson in terms of healthcare advocacy, that those are very different types of medical issues that you have to manage separately. And I use that still today to say, okay, these are the doctors that we work with in terms of maintaining Kevin's quality of life. And then we continue to work with these diagnosticians.
Speaking of your quality of life, you had a group of friends who could hang out with, they would come and play video games with you. How important was having that kind of outside social interaction to get you through some of these really hard times?
It was amazingly important. Like when I was in the hospital, a lot of my friends didn't come visit, and it got incredibly lonely. It was amazing the difference of when I came home, they were able to kind of stomach visiting me rather than when I was in the hospital with all the tubes and everything and the depressing environment. And the spirits it brought was amazing.
Mm-hmm. And yet at some point you write in the book that you didn't feel like seeing your friends anymore, like you didn't know them because you were stuck in this bed with IVs and stuff. Like, you were living in a different place than them. How long did it take to reconnect after you had started to go back to school and try and regain your life?
It took a month or two to really kind of get back in the swing of things, kind of figure out where I stood and all that, because I was still in a wheelchair, still had an IV, and so still, and only going to one class a day, so it's still hard to reconnect with my friends and find out where I could fit in.
Hmm. Vicky, the short answer is he had to have surgery to fix an obstruction. I don't even know. I'm not even going to try and say this big long word. Duodenostomy or something. I don't know. You say, Kevin.
Duodenostomy.
Thank you very much. was finally having that accurate diagnosis and a path forward. What did that mean to you and your life and your family?
Having a plan, having hope, makes an incredible amount of difference. There was just having a diagnosis, I think, even more than the plan forward, understanding what is this enemy that you're facing, was probably the significant turning point. There was still a long, year-long path of a difficult surgery. The last time on a teenager, they had completed a duodenostomy at Primary Children's, had been 10 years before, and Kevin was so thin at that point. He was over 5 feet and 63 pounds about. Mm. And so there wasn't a whole lot of tolerance in case something went wrong, and he spent weeks in the hospital waiting for those intestines that had been so damaged to begin. Ultimately, they did not. He was on single source nutrition via PICC line for 8 months after that. And yet, at that point, the stress didn't go away, because you're still managing a very dangerous kind of an intravenous medical procedure daily. But there was hope that suddenly we knew what we were fighting. We could see it in the x-rays. We could test what his nutritional levels were. And so it propelled us forward.
Knowing what you know now, the benefit of hindsight, I suppose, is 2020. If you had to live through this again, what would you have done differently as a parent of a sick child?
Mm-hmm. I've given this a lot of thought, and certainly it was the reason that we wrote the book, to shortcut the path for other people who might be facing this, and hopefully to provide insight into the doctors. I think that in the first time we went to the hospital, once I saw the path where they were going that didn't fit with my gut, that I knew in my deepest heart place that he was not a anorexia nervosa case. And I think at that point, I would ask questions and more quickly move into a different set of doctors. Once I get the sense now that a doctor's locked on to a predetermined kind of a diagnosis without being able to explain why they arrived there.
So listening to your gut, that's one of the takeaways for you?
It's and maybe it's more than gut. I mean, I had the day-to-day evidence to say, wait a minute, you know, so maybe it is more than gut. Maybe it's more perceptions of different points of input. Mm-hmm. But it's that, and it's finding the right healthcare provider. The people who connect with your case, who are taking the time to understand it, who are offering paths forward rather than accepting the status quo. I think our family doctors, and as Kevin said, it's one reason we can't say enough great things about them. They had lines that we would hang on to. You know, real focal pain is real pain. and no one should have to live like this. And those two lines, I think, if I internalized them more earlier and I found doctors who approached Kevin's case that way from the beginning, I think we could have taken that 10 months out where we were trying to get a diagnosis. And I think then that his recovery would have been that much faster because he wouldn't have been in such a critical health state.
Mm. Kevin, what do you take away from this? Because this saga took away some really choice years of your life, at, you know, through middle school and into high school. What have you learned from the whole experience?
I've learned that's a hard one to place. I've definitely learned a bit more about how to be kind of sympathetic to others, you know, like actually listening to what they're dealing with and trying to help and all that kind of stuff. And it's actually put me on a career path that I, or hopefully,
mm-hmm.
that I've chosen.
What would you like to do?
I would like to be a pediatric surgeon. So, like, med school and all that, so.
That's a lofty goal.
Yeah.
And I assume you'll take some of the lessons that you learned interacting with doctors into your own practice?
Yes, definitely.
What do you think about that ambition, Vicki Whiting?
Well, I'm so proud of Kevin, the strength and resilience he's shown through all of this, and that he really is very compassionate. If you watch him interacting with people anywhere, he listens, he connects with them. And to have that gift for other kids in the future, boy, a mom couldn't ask for more than that.
Hmm. Vicki Whiting, a professor of management in the Gore School of Business at Westminster College. Her son, Kevin Whiting, a senior at Park City High School. Together, they've written a memoir, In Pain, We Trust, a conversation between mother and son on the journey from sickness to health. And Kevin Whiting and Vicki Whiting, thanks very much, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up next, what's on the minds of Latina women today? But first, a break. This is City Views on KCPW, Salt Lake City. Thank you.